Hey everyone, welcome to That Triathlon Life Podcast. I'm Eric Lagerstrom.
I'm Paula Finlay.
I'm Nick Goldston.
And we are coming to you from Ventura, California.
Woo!
We feel like we just didn't have enough of Nick, so we decided to come most of the way to Nick. Not all the way, that'd be overwhelming.
I disagree. I want you guys sleeping in the bed with me at night.
Nick is 1 hour.
An hour and 15 south. Minutes without traffic south.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the reason we're in Ventura and the podcast yet again has been a godsend because we put a call out maybe a month ago saying we want to get away for a warm weather camp. We're completely happy to pay, but we don't want to pay these exorbitant prices that Airbnb charges for all the fees and everything. So a super nice guy reached out to us and offered us his rental home / second home in Ventura for a significantly less amount of money than we'd be paying otherwise. So thank you so much. And we are so happy to be here.
So for those of you who don't know where Ventura is in California. It is north of the Santa Monica Mountains, Malibu.
North of Malibu. Just north of Malibu. Yeah.
North of Malibu. So yeah, basically Nick is like at the south end of the Santa Monica Mountains, north end of LA. And we are, an hour of mountains and not much going on up north of that. Northwest, kind of? Like the coast hooks around.
Yeah. I don't think we intro'd who we are, though.
Who are we?
In case you're new here, Eric and I are professional triathletes. Nick is an amateur triathlete, professional musician, and our best friend. And we've been doing this podcast for 104 episodes now.
Yeah, which is wild.
And what we do is we talk a little bit about what's going on in triathlon, current events, breaking news.
Oh, yeah, we got to do that. Someone told me if they don't hear the breaking news jingle for an announcement that we're going to make, I don't want to call it an announcement, but for a conversation we're going to have, they'll be pissed.
Yeah.
So if it's 104 episodes, that's exactly 2 years.
Yes, except that we have missed a few here or there.
Yep.
So it is exactly 2 years of recordings every week, but we've missed a couple. It was the first.
I think literally a couple.
Yeah, I think maybe two.
Yeah.
And I remember, it was mid-January at the time. I was in Tucson. And I remember I recorded from the Airbnb in Tucson our very first episode thinking, well, let's see where this thing goes.
Might as well.
Yeah.
It's been great. We've had a blast with it. Thanks to everybody who's listened and been along for the ride. And I think we're just hitting our stride, though. It's just going to keep getting better and better.
Speaking of which, I wanted to talk about something that we teased last week. Well, we didn't tease it. We fully went for it, which was the hashtag TTL Kick Challenge. It came in from a podcast listener. They wanted to know what a moderate kick was, and we kind of translated that into, how about an all-out 100 kick? What could we do? Wait a second. Did you guys not do it?
Yeah, we didn't do it.
Everyone else did it except for the two of you. Okay, I think you guys should do it at some point. Is it just you're afraid of the pain? Is it you're too weak?
No. We've fully been intending to do it. We've just had a ridiculous last week since we talked about this and the pod came out. And we obviously record the podcast prior to you actually hearing it.
I think the problem is, we drove down to California.
That's what I'm getting to.
You guys had to pack. You had people that came. Your dad came into town too.
We have not done a lot of swimming.
I did a lot of swimming last week. But here's the problem too, is that you go to swimming for a hard workout. It's the last thing you want to do at the end of a hard workout. You go to this pool for an easy day. It's the last thing you want to do on an easy day.
I'm not going to go as far as make that excuse because that's a lame excuse. I'm sure everybody listening did.
I'm just saying everyone else who did it, you're better than Eric and Paula. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying
right
it's a good excuse. I'm saying that is what I felt.
Yeah. And I wasn't about to put the gas pedal down and say that we had to do it. I didn't feel like doing it either.
So I'll say this. I did it and it was horrendous as I expected. And I was hoping to just go barely under 2 minutes and do 158. And I did 149, which I thought was world record speed.
Yeah, that's good. Now.
And it's not good compared to short course yards. Yeah. And I didn't do a real flip turn. I grabbed the wall. Not that I did. Nothing was going to help me. It was just pure suffering.
Yeah. As if your flip turns would have gotten you faster.
Definitely not. So I looked at, cause I actually recorded it in regular time and then sped it up in post later. So I saw exactly what it looked like. You know, in a time lapse, it's kind of hard to see. And my first 50 was at 140-ish pace, a little faster. And then I was at a 20 seconds per 100 slower pace for my second 50. So the wheels really came off for me.
So you went out in a 40 like, and you came back in a 49.
I went out in a 50.
And you went in a 50 and you came back in a 59.
Yes, exactly. And it was very hard. I remember feeling like, you know, they say don't kick from your knees, like kick from your hips. I could not kick from my hips anymore. It was like the hips stopped working.
Isn't that crazy how your body just gives out?
I just couldn't do it. It wasn't a whether I wanted to do it or not. It just was not going to happen.
Yeah. It's like doing a VO2 max test to failure.
You just fail. But I was so impressed with how fast some of the podcast listeners could do this.
I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who did participate. And an apology, which we did not fully think of, is that a lot of pools don't allow cameras. So we completely understand that rule. And we try to respect it as much as we can. We only film at pools that allow it or that know us and know we're just filming ourselves. So if you couldn't do it because of the filming issue, you can still do it.
And there's going to be a podcast poll this week where you can enter in kind of the range that you were in. We'll get some, that'll be some fun data to have.
Yeah, but we got a lot of good times. And also, I hope we didn't miss any because there were so many coming at us with different hashtags and different names and stories that disappear. So hopefully we didn't miss any, but we think we've got the two fastest times.
And we didn't say this last week, but we're going to do fastest male time and fastest female time.
Yeah, we had a couple people write about that, which after we had already thought about it, like we need to be fair and do.
Yeah, totally.
And we're giving an equal amount of bottles to the men and the
very
women.
Very nice, Eric. I love that. Equity.
Yeah, the women only get two, though, and the men get three.
As is right in triathlon, male-dominated sport. No, everyone's getting three bottles, of course. So I can't even believe these times because both the male and the female times are probably faster than I could do a maybe the female time is like close to the fastest I could do with my arms. So the fastest woman was Hannah Orbach-Mondel with a 111, which
short course yards.
Short course yards.
25 yards.
Yeah, short course yards. And then the fastest male, also short course yards, was, and I promise this is not rigged, but this is a very good friend of mine, Keith Eriks. So Keith is a very close friend of mine in Santa Monica. He's a triathlete, not a swimmer, but he did go to Olympic trials for Canada for swimming.
In which stroke?
I think he was backstroke.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he was backstroke, which is a kick-heavy stroke, of course. Yeah. But he did it flutter kick. Like, so both of these were done with flutter kick. I think maybe we thought that the breaststroke kick would dominate.
No.
No, you don't
absolutely
think so?
Not.
No. I just heard from several people, oh, the breaststroke kick is faster. Because your breaststroke is you know, it's so much of that is the kick.
I was always a faster.
Wow, I would not have thought
anybody. If you're a breaststroker, your breaststroke kick is faster than your freestyle kick.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah.
But I don't know if like.
You think a freestyler, their flutter kick is faster than a breaststroke kick?
I don't know. You get so much power when you do a breaststroke
kick. There's no dead spot in a flutter kick, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the power spot is so much faster than flutter.
Yeah.
I just wonder if like in a breaststroke, like the arms are so good at negating that dead spot that it makes a big difference. But I mean,
we're obviously not experts on breaststroke.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, okay.
Did you already name both of the?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It's Hannah and Keith.
Okay. So if you two can please email Nick or
Keith,
message,
you don't have to email me, Keith.
Message Nick your address. And for everyone that's a bottle winner for this or for next bottle winners or previous bottle winners, we did not bring bottles to this place.
Yes. So it's going to be a minute before you get
your
bottles. We'll
ship them in March. Yeah. Unfortunately. And but you will get them.
Before he even met me, he had a TTL hat that he raced.
Specialized Purist bottles are like
they're
gold.
They're really good bottles. Yep. They're the bottles.
If I didn't have some, I would want some.
Totally. Okay. Well, thank you everyone for participating in the hashtag TTL Kick Challenge. That was very fun. And once again, if you're listening to this podcast on Spotify, you can put in the poll what you did if you did it. And I'm going to leave the poll open for a month. So even if you want to do it within the next month, you can go back and put your results in.
Awesome.
Or you can put them in feel free to leave them as a comment as well. Okay. On to, do we want to call this breaking news?
No.
Okay. I'm still playing the jingle though. this is I would say kind of a cool announcement that people have been waiting for, which is the PTO schedule has finally been announced.
Yes.
So we obviously all know that that Ironman now has their own tour and the PTO has their own tour and they're calling it, what are they calling it, Paula?
The T100.
T100 Triathlon World Tour. And that will be, how many races is it? And is it all over the world? Paula, I know that you have been hearing about this for so many months because you are on the board, but Eric and I haven't. And neither have the listeners.
Yeah, I know. I just think that like a lot of the things that we would talk about with this are just revealing the statistics or revealing the truth or revealing the facts, I guess, which you can get easily from other podcasts or on the PTO website. So I don't want to go too much into the detail on this podcast. But yes, the T100 Triathlon World Tour, there are 8 races, 20 men, 20 women. And because of my ranking last year in 7th, I got a contract. So basically it's a contract that I signed with a guaranteed salary, I guess, to show up at 6 races in total out of the 8.
Of your choosing?
Of my choosing,
yeah. Including the final?
5 plus the grand final, which you have to do. So 6 total, yeah.
Got it. Okay.
So yeah, I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be a super exciting year for triathlon. It kind of guarantees that you get more head-to-head racing from like the best athletes at that distance. And I think last year we got a bit of that, but a lot of people skipped Singapore. A lot of people were skipping Milwaukee. You know, people were fitting it into their own schedules around maybe their other goals. But it feels like this year people's goals are this. So they will be there. And also there's contracts that, you know, require them to be there.
And does this prohibit you from doing 70.3s, Ironman branded 70.3s?
No, it's not meant to make you an exclusive PTO athlete, but or T100 athlete. It'll be interesting to see what people decide to do, whether they decide to just really focus in on this, try to make the maximum amount of money in this, or if they try to kind of double dip. But you can do both if you want. Okay. It's just crazy.
But not the royal you, the you. What are you feeling like you're going to do? How, are you going to be able to do like 170.3?
Yeah, I might do like a couple 70.3
worlds.
And 70.3 worlds, yeah, maybe. But in races that are in North America that don't require a bunch of travel. And I'll see how I feel come December if I want to make the trip to New Zealand. But
yeah, why would you do a 70.3 when you could just do only this really big, huge series with like 10 times the prize purse of a 70.3? Like, what is the appeal of still doing a 70.3 even?
Well, I like 70.3s. This PTO T100 series is only 6 races. Usually I'll race 10 or 12 times in a year. So you can buffer it out with other races that are important to you. And there's bonuses, there's prize money, there's other financial incentive to do 70.3 as well. And then also we just like them.
Do you think that sponsors that provide bonuses, podium bonuses, are still a little bit favoring 70.3 races?
Yes, for me, yes. It's kind of funny. Like it seems like some of the newer contracts are catching on of how big the PTO series is and how many eyeballs it gets. But yeah, Ironman is just the way it's been forever. And that's what the age group athletes are racing predominantly. So for most sponsors, it's still rewarding results at Ironman or 70.3 races with the bonuses.
I think if a company is not necessarily a triathlon specific company, it's a lot to expect that like a bike company is going to understand the impact that the PTO is having on the triathlon space in the course of 1 year, but now it's been around for 2 years. They've heard a lot of athletes talking about it, so it's catching on more and more. But a company that's like very bike focused that is also sponsoring athletes, like we've got SRAM and Zip and Specialized, like these are not companies that are triathlon companies to their core. And I think, you know, like they just, Ironman's been around so long, it still has that brand equity. But the PTO has done a really good job of sending the athletes like, here's a pitch deck that has all of the info on how many views these races get and how many people are watching this on YouTube versus TV and et cetera, et cetera. So they've done a really good job of equipping the athletes to present the value of this series to their sponsors.
And is there an opportunity? I remember the Edmonton race that I raced, that I had a lot of fun with that. Is there an opportunity for anyone other than these 20 pros to do these races?
Yes, I think most of them will have an age group
most
component as well.
Wow.
Like the Singapore race definitely does. I believe Ibiza does. Miami has its own, I think, through Clash age group race. So yeah, there's opportunities to also race.
Wow.
The events.
And then get to, I think that I heard Sam Renouf talking, and they've tried to intentionally make it so that the age group athletes can still observe the pros, watch the pros if you're a fan of the pros.
I mean, that's also like in their best interest.
Right, exactly.
To have crowds.
I think it's cool. So like you can make a whole weekend of it and go and like race your race, but then also hang out and like watch the best athletes in the world if you happen to be relatively local. Rather, you know, it's like it's cool to be on the race course at the same time, but also they're trying to go for a more atmosphere of a festival and have it, you know.
That's a good question. Would I rather be on the race course at the same time or give the pro race my undivided attention?
Yeah. What's your gut reaction?
I mean, I recall being at races and going by pros and thinking, that's cool. This is cool. Mm. I'm doing the same thing they're doing. But at this point, I think I'm so into pro triathlon that I would want to be able to sit there and watch it and get every second of the drama and soak it in instead of having to worry about my own race at the same time.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be a poll.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that if we didn't have the kick. So, maybe I'll think of something.
Sam can make an Instagram
poll. Oh, we'll do an Instagram poll.
Yeah.
Would you rather...
Half of the shit we come up with is like created while we're talking on the podcast.
Like off the stuff that we do off the podcast is like, we're just talking about it here and then it happens.
It's not like most podcasts probably have like, this is what we're talking about today and we're going to do this poll and we're going to do a kick challenge and we're just like... deciding mid-question to do a kick challenge and like hundreds of people do it.
It's called jazz, baby. It's called improvisation.
I love it.
It's called, this is what influencing is.
We're influencing ourselves on the podcast. Okay, well, let's move on to our little segment that we're going to do before questions. I bank these when they come in questions. So this is from a while ago, but we're going to do a little rapid fire. Okay. Hi, all. A few random rapid-fire questions to all three of you. Hope they have not been asked before. One, in which country and city would you go live if you'd have to move and why? USA and Canada not allowed as answers. For me, Udine, Italy, where I grew up. I freaking love it there. And it was just named the most, the best quality of life in Italy. So.
Okay, I'm going with you.
Okay, Udine? Eric, you're going to leave your fiance with me in Udine?
Encinitas, California.
You can't say U.S. or Canada.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was the that's what makes this hard.
Sorry, I was already thinking about my answer when that stipulation came in. No U.S. or Canada.
Don't say Girona, please.
Nick, Eric, obviously you're coming with us. We're all going to Italy.
Okay.
Okay, very nice. All right, number two. What piece of triathlon knowledge do you wish you had when you started the sport?
I don't know. I wanted to do it so badly that I don't think there was ever, it came into my mind early on of like, is it worth it? Like it took a long time for me to have that, is it worth it?
It's funny, you two are opposites in that way. Like every time I hear Eric talk about his origin story in triathlon, it's like, I did everything to make this happen. I worked in the bike shop. You never stopped thinking about the dream. You just had it so deep in you and you weren't necessarily that genetically gifted for it and you still just went for it and broke through and still had success. Whereas I feel like Paula's over here saying she wishes she was a doctor, you know, and she's like, you know, top 10 in the world at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like this is hard because if when I sit and think about like, okay, what would I do differently? Or like if triathlon, like my career, I couldn't walk tomorrow, what would I do differently? And I feel like I'm doing everything that I am, that like what I'm doing right now fits perfectly into all the things that I like to do anyway. And I'm just like, when something cool occurs to me, I do it. And that is part of my job.
Exactly.
So totally. It's hard. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel the same way.
Rapid fire.
Wow, talking shit. Okay, next one. What sponsor do you wish you'd have? Sorry, Nick, no current sponsors as answers allowed. Yeah, so and this question's for you guys.
Which sponsor do you wish you had?
Yeah.
Sunglasses. I'm serious, though.
DJI, maybe. That would be a nice.
DJI, freaking call me. Call me back, please. One that I think would be cool is like visit a place.
Yeah, visit Bend, visit Oregon, like, visit Canmore, visit Alberta.
Like, we'll give you a house that you can stay in for one, like a 1 year trial period of Ventura or, you know, et cetera.
Not like, even a year, but yeah.
Just some, yeah.
A year would be nice where you can just like go.
Whatever it is, like here's a free place to stay. Just like live here, make cool content about the place. That would be pretty sick.
I think it would be cooler if it was in a short-term basis. So like you get a place to stay in Santa Monica for a month.
Mm.
And in return, you're just creating content about Santa Monica. It's what we're doing anyway. You wouldn't believe the number of people that stop us in Bend, total strangers, and say we moved here because of you two.
Yeah, I've been
it's
there for...
It's outrageous. In our neighborhood, too. So, I don't know. It's like clearly a thing that
it
Eric
works.
Is really good at selling the beautifulness of places. And that's true, Eric. That'd be a sweet sponsorship.
Yeah.
That's an outside the box
Or partnership. It's not even a sponsorship. It's a partnership, you know?
You give us the key to the city, we'll come for a month and hang out.
Yeah. Cost them...
Next to nothing.
Next to $20,000 Airbnb.
I think a lot less than, like, you know, the freaking billboard behind first base at right. a bunch of different baseball games.
Right.
Yeah. That's cool.
Okay, number four. Which exotic race would you like to do right now? Like Patagon Man?
Yeah, like yeah. I do really want to do that whenever I am ready for iron... long distance.
Not just iron.
Yeah.
Like wild, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Sebastian Kienle has been doing Ironman for a long time, and he said that was the hardest thing he'd ever done by a significant margin. So,
Paula?
I don't have an answer. I just like racing to race, is that racing at races I can drive to.
That's
exotic race. That's 70.3 Oregon.
Yeah. Salem.
The closer it is to my home, the more I like it.
Last one is, for Nick only, would you rather win your age group at Kona or become a top 10 pro? I have a very clear answer to this, but I'm curious what you guys think I'm going to say.
Kona.
Would I and no podiums, though, for as a pro.
Nick wouldn't. You would not like being a pro.
Correct. Yeah, I'd way rather podium at Kona.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a pro, and I would love to podium
at
Kona.
Yeah, you know too many pros. You're too.
Yeah, I'm jaded. Yeah, I've seen behind the curtain, and it's difficult. Cheers, Matt. Thanks for those, Matt. That was fun. Okay, let's move on to questions, and you too can submit your questions for the podcast at thattriathlonlife.com/podcast. And you can also become a podcast supporter there. And as you've probably heard us say many times before, podcast supporters are the only way that this podcast goes forward. We really appreciate all the podcast supporters that are already podcast supporters. And there's no, I forget what these like radio shows say now, but like there's no better time than now to become a podcast supporter. So we'd really appreciate it. First question here. From Kaylee, who is a TTL Devo alum. Do you think it will be possible to break into the top 10, maybe even top 20 now without being assigned athlete in the PTO T100 race series? The strength of field is now swung way more towards the PTO races, and it will be even harder to get high scoring races in other events. Just curious what your thoughts are for those athletes on the rise, but not good enough to be able to race PTO yet. So first of all, when Kaylee says top 10 or even top 20, what is she even talking about?
She's talking about the PTO world ranking system. So there's like a gold level and bronze level and whatever, different levels of races that have different amounts of points. The PTO races are generally have pretty high amounts of points relative to going and winning 70.3, a small 70.3. So the core of the issue here is, will someone like Kaylee or even me be able to accumulate enough points racing low level 70.3s because we don't have the opportunity to race the T100 series? Will we be able to get enough points to get high enough ranked to even get into the T100 series? Or is it kind of like this closed loop where once you're in it, it's very hard to fall out of it, and it's very hard for anybody new to get into it?
But you can accrue these points racing non-PTO races.
Yes, you can. I think the issue is that just...
You don't get as many points.
It's an extreme example would be you could win 70.3...
Tasmania
by 10 minutes and get 80 points, but you could get 12th place at PTO, the T100 race, and get 100 points just because it's weighted more heavily. There's higher competition. You know, it's
so now that we know this,
yep.
What do you think?
I think that the way into the series... Paula knows a little bit more about it than me, but I feel like the way into the series is going to be getting a wild card invite. You need to do something impressive enough in a 70.3 event that you can race to get a wild card invite. And then you get into one of these T100 series races and you do something impressive enough that maybe gets you a second invite as a wild card. And then the following year, those two performances will get you a hot shot invite, which is So the top 16 athletes get an automatic invitation, and there's four athletes in addition to that to get something called a hotshot invite, which they're invited to do the whole series.
Oh, I see. So I actually didn't know the hotshot part for myself. So I just saw there's some big names on there.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, it's just like triathlon celebrities, basically.
Right. Yeah. So this year, the hot shots that they've picked have historically had pretty good results or are a very big name or a combination of the two. But I think next year, my guess is that if you get a wild card thing into Singapore or whatever, and you get like fifth place, they're going to give you a wild card to the next one. And if you go to that one and you get seventh, then I think there's a really good chance you'll get one of those hot shot invites, even if you at the end of the year are only ranked 28th.
Right. Got it.
That's my feeling. Is that like that's your best way in? So,
but the moral of the story is it's very difficult to get into it.
Yes.
But I would argue it was very difficult to get into the top 20 this year.
Yes.
So I think that people.
It's the top 20. It's the top 20 in the world. Of course it's difficult.
The people that are in the series this year did earn their spot there and did work hard and get good enough races to be there. So, I don't think it's necessarily a closed series, and they're being pretty vocal about the fact that it isn't. And I think the goal down the line is to have development races or have some kind of like B League where it can feed in to the T100 series. You know how triathlon is, people retire every year, people get injured. I think that as the series goes on and we're later in the year, there may become more wild cards up for slot for grabs as people get hurt or whatever it is, you know?
The thing that excites
me, very dynamic.
I'm excited about, like you said, more head-to-head racing.
Yeah.
It's not just one very strong athlete showing up to a 70.3 that we know they're going to win, and then it's just fighting for second and third place. Yeah. At any one of these races, there's like eight people that could win. And I think, I don't know if we will
see more than that.
The same person winning each race the way that we may have seen before.
Yeah.
It'll be, as a spectator, it'll be really fun to watch. Not just watch these individual heroic efforts, but people actually racing each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a totally fair concern. Kaylee was on our Devo team last year.
Yes, I mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fair concern.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, this is the premium level racing in the sport. You can still do 70.3s, you can still do Ironmans, you can still do challenge races, you can still do Xterra.
Which I would say will be a little less competitive now.
Yes, theoretically it should be less competitive because the top 20 athletes in the world are focusing on the T100 series races. So it's like Formula One. There's Formula One, there's Formula Two, there's Formula Three. And if you manage to make it into Formula One, yes, it's a lot easier to stay there than it was to get into it, is my perception. But there, it is the elites, the tippy top. So, like, I would wish I could be in it. But
Derek, are you racing the T100?
I'm not.
Nick, maybe he'll get a wild
card. I got T99 problems.
But the T100 ain't one.
That's not one of them.
Very nice. Well said. Okay, well, Kaylee, good luck. We would obviously love to selfishly and selflessly see you race in the PTO T100 World Tour.
Yeah, totally.
Next question here. Hi, Flynn and company. Oh boy, rough start for Eric already. I have two questions for all of you, and I'm reading both because I feel they're actually very related.
You know, honestly, I'm just going to interject here. It's been a little bit sad for me not hearing Paula, Eric, Nick, and Flynn.
Oh, really?
And I'm okay with it. Really? At first, I was a little bit annoyed, but now...
Wow.
I miss it a little bit.
Okay. Careful what you ask for. The listeners love to kind of rag on you a little
I'm
bit.
I'm not asking
this,
for anything. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I like our boy.
Okay. So here we go. And he's right here, like half asleep. He's obviously was just running in his dream a couple minutes ago because his legs were going.
Yeah.
Okay. I have worked with a coach the past 3 years while getting into triathlon. I'm at a place where I no longer feel like I need my coach and want to take some of the stress off training by doing it on my own. I don't pay him during the off season, so I am at a good spot to transition. Do I let my coach know I won't be using him again? Do I just unlink him from my Training Peaks account? Jesus, that's brutal. Yeah. How do I handle this transition? Now, I'm now going to read the second question. My second question is about swimming. My swim is significantly weaker than my bike and run. I have one of the strongest bike times in my age group, and my run is middle of the pack, but my swim in open water ends up being almost 2 minutes per 100 yards. I only swim twice a week, swimming about 25 to 3,000 yards. Do I add another swim day in? Do I pay for a swim lesson to try and work on my form? What's the best way for me to shave time off my swim? Thank you guys for all your help and all you do for the sport. So I kind of thought it was a funny pairing of questions to say, I no longer need my coach, but I also am having serious struggles swimming and I'm one of the fastest bikers. So it's like you have all this fitness that you're not expressing well in the pool. Presumably a coach would help you with exactly this, but
yeah.
I guess if you're saying you want to take the stress off, like the coach is stressing you out, I mean, is that a conversation you'd have with the coach? I definitely wouldn't just take him off the Training Peaks account. That seems so intense. But what do you guys think? What would you do here?
I think that we're thinking about like us doing that to our coach, who we have a really strong relationship with. I don't think everyone has a really strong personal relationship with their coach. Yeah, you should definitely let the coach know. And I don't think that coaches should take it personally. If you explain your reasoning, you're too stressed out, you need a break from it, maybe I'll come back to it. It's not because I think I'm better than you. It's just what I need.
But do you think that it's worth having that conversation with a coach?
Yes,
100%.
Like, this is kind of adding more stress than it's taking away.
Don't just ghost them.
Yeah.
I think that's just like a human respect thing. It's not even a triathlon thing.
Yeah.
But okay, and what do you think about the second question, which I was very much pairing with the first question, but I guess we could treat it as its own question. If you're swimming 2 minutes per 100 yards and you're at the front of your bike group, that's a gigantic discrepancy. So what do you think they should do? Swim another time in a week if they're swimming 2,500 to 3,000 yards?
They're swimming 2,500 to 3,000 yards.
Per swim twice a week. Do I add another swim day in?
Yes.
Do I pay for a swim lesson?
I would say add three more swim days in.
I mean, I think if you're that fit on the bike, there's some serious form issues there.
Yeah. Swim a lot more and get a swim coach.
That's what she's asking. What's my best use of resources here? Is going to the pool three extra times going to make me faster? Or is it better to keep doing the two swims, but get a swim coach? And really the answer is maybe like all of those things.
That's what I said. Yeah. Get a swim coach and swim more.
I think there's no world where you don't at least get a video of yourself just to see what you look like at least. Mm-hmm. And then next step, have a real swim coach look at you, because
yeah.
I'm just afraid that they're going to swim five times a week and reinforce bad habits.
Yeah. That's true. Like there is this thought of like swimming more kind of just makes you more efficient naturally because your body wants to be efficient in its movements.
You know what I'll say though? I swim three times a week at the pool at the same time and I see the same people swimming three times a week with the same horrible crossover.
Yeah, but I'm talking like six times a week for 6K.
You think that would kind of, in some way, it'll fix itself a little bit?
I think when you get that like much load, maybe. It's kind of our coach's philosophy. He tries to fix things through using paddles or doing pull boy with band or ankles, drills, stuff like that. But I've never been told by Paulo to like fix something very specific about my form.
I have.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Is it your breathing thing?
Yeah. And the thing is like, yes, Paulo and I grew up swimming and we were swimming 6K a day, 6 days a week, forever and ever. But that wasn't it. Like the things that I sometimes forget is that, yes, that coach was giving us cues. That coach was giving us very specific drills to do. We were doing workouts designed around these drills and reinforcing things and then doing strength work. We were doing all of these things. It was an all-encompassing approach. It wasn't like we would go one day with the coach and then the next 4 days there was no coach. They were always there watching for things.
Mm. Yeah. It's easy to rewrite the memory in your
head.
Maybe
that's why triathletes have a really hard time learning to swim as adults.
Yeah.
Because there's no coach on deck. Like we grew up, like Eric just said.
It's probably part of it.
For 12 years with a coach on deck 7 times a week giving us feedback. And you're young and you're absorbing all these things and like, you know, it's easier to make changes. But
yeah,
maybe that's the root of all of this. Everyone needs to be coached more.
Yeah.
I mean, the only people who have ever told me about my swim form are the two of you. And I guess like Ellie and Holly, when they saw me swim, it's just like a few times when pros have seen me swim.
Yeah.
Maybe if I had a coach there all the time, I'd be fast.
Yeah. If we were your coach, we'd be standing there like, Nick, remember high elbow. Remember that left arm's going to, you know, just like at the beginning of every workout. And then we'd give you one extra thing in the middle of the workout and just like constantly reinforce it. That looks good. What you just did there on that last 100, that looked good.
Right.
And you're like, okay, whatever, however that felt, reinforce, try to keep that going.
Okay, so the consensus here is be nice to your coach if you're going to break up with them. Explain what you're doing, but first at least see if you can reconcile something. And then for your swimming, you're going to have to probably have someone look at your swim, and swimming more is always better. Good luck. Next question here. Hi, TTL crew. Listening to your podcast is my savior whenever I need to drive an hour into Boise, Idaho for groceries, group rides, and such. I have a question regarding nutrition and recovery. I've started ramping up training for the Tour de Bloom stage race in May, and I've also been strength training, swimming, and running this time of year. I mainly do triathlons, but I'm dabbling in road racing to get faster, and it's cheaper. Could waking up in the morning with intense hunger be a sign of underfueling? If it's really bad, I'll have a headache too and feel a little nauseous or just crappy. It's usually the morning after a hard and or long session. I call it my workout hangover, but no alcohol involved. Does anyone else ever experience this? I'm guessing it could be a combination of dehydration and underfueling, but I was wondering if anyone else has ever experienced this and what their triggers and solutions are. So I just like to start by saying that I reached out to a dietitian and they said 1000% this is underfueling. If you're waking up feeling like that, it's very likely to be that. But the three of us, Eric, do you have this feeling ever? If you feel like you didn't do a good job fueling during an exercise the next day?
Generally speaking, the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning is being hungry. And I feel like I do a pretty good job of fueling, but unless I go to bed feeling full, like borderline stuffed, I'm going to either wake up and get a midnight snack or be hungry enough in the morning that I want to get up. But I don't ever have like a headache or feel super terrible about it. I think I'm kind of like right on the edge.
How many nights a week would you say you wake up in the middle of the night for a midnight snack?
It goes in phases when we're training really heavily.
Almost every night.
Most nights. Yeah. And it's like pretty cyclical. It'd be like 2:01 a.m.
Wow.
You know, it's like my body just gets into a routine with it. It's like, oh, this is like the fourth meal that we have and I'm ready for it. So
circadian rhythm.
I try to like keep that from happening. But I do think like to a certain degree, if you're training a lot or you did like a 6-hour bike ride with a run off the bike and all these things, like there's just only so much time left in that day to eat. And that like suppresses your hunger a little bit. And so it's really hard to play catch up in the evening if you did not fuel like crazy in the middle of the workout.
Yeah. I think this is part of why protein shakes are so good, because like it exercise does suppress hunger and it's like, I can get this down. Mm-hmm. I can get this in.
Yeah.
Paula, what about you? Do you ever wake up in the morning if you feel like you didn't do such a good job at refueling after workouts or fueling during the workouts? Do you wake up in the morning feeling a little hungover?
Hungover?
Yeah. Like, crappy, nauseous, headache.
I don't know if I always, I think my problem is more hydrating well. So I'll get headaches or not feel well if I didn't drink enough the day before. And I get really thirsty in the middle of the night. Like I'll wake up with this intense thirst of, I need a bubbly water.
Right.
I think your issue is like water's not interesting enough for you. And you go for the bubbly water.
I get that. In the summers, that's what happens to me.
I think this is for a lot of people.
Water's not interesting enough, so I do like lemonade with water or a bubbly water or something I feel like it's like my brain doesn't want just water. Bubbly water like tricks you into thinking there's calories
in
it.
Yeah, but you can't drink as much of it.
Exactly. Like the amount of times that I walk around the house and like I see a can of bubbly water and it's had like 5 sips out of it. And I know Paul is super thirsty because it's like 107 degrees outside.
But you can't have that much more. Yeah.
Versus if you could drink like two cans of regular water. You could chug them straight when you're thirsty, no problem.
Okay, this is kind of a side thing, but Paul, you know what I love doing? And I may have mentioned this in the podcast. We're 104 episodes in, so I think it's okay if we start repeating ourselves. But in the summer, I'll take lemonade and I'll make ice pops out of it. And after a hard run or a hard ride to come home and know there's a frozen lemonade pop for me is one of the best.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I love that. Okay, but my question for you is because I have something like this happens to me. I don't wake up with a headache or feeling nauseous or anything. But just Saturday, I did a long ride. It was 6 hours of moving time. And the next day, I did a trail run with David. And the first like 30 minutes, I felt shaky and lightheaded. Mm. And I know that I just couldn't keep up with the nutrition on the ride before. And I'm certain that it was because of like, there were not enough calories in my system. Like I had not given myself, even though I tried to eat a lot that night, I just could not keep up with it. You guys don't have this. You never feel. And then once I like got into the run and ate a little bit, had a gel, I did feel totally better by the end of the run. at a low intensity. Do you guys ever have that where at the beginning of an exercise you feel a little lightheaded, a little loopy, a little shaky?
I do if it's a run at the end of the day.
Yep.
After a hard ride evening or a hard swim.
Okay. Yeah. So it does.
So I think it is a calorie thing.
I've only ever had it in runs too, not on rides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because running is hard no matter how slow you go.
As we have said many times. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And how do you reconcile that?
Just have a gel or just suffer it out and dream about French fries.
Yeah.
Dream about French fries.
That's what I crave. If I get really dizzy in a run because I'm
it's like salt bonking,
I all I want is McDonald's.
I remember
fries.
This. We were in a.
So that's a hydration and a fueling thing.
Yeah.
Because I assume it's the salt of the French fries.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, I remember my coach telling me, like, it's pay attention to what you're craving at the end of a workout.
Yeah.
If it's sugary or if it's salty. That's interesting. Okay, so the solutions for this, what would you say? I mean, I think a big part of it is...
I think we've exhausted it.
Well, we haven't given a solution. And I would just like to say that... keep in
mind,
we
don't give solutions on this podcast.
I'm going to try to help with this one because I have a little bit of.
I also have a good answer if Nick's is insufficient.
Okay, I'm just going to sit back.
Eric, do you want to start with yours since it's probably more accurate than what I'm going to say?
Well, it's just fueling properly in the first thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time that I commit to having like 60 to 90 grams of carbs on a long ride that leads into a run, I feel so good in the last hour of a 4-hour, 5-hour bike ride, and the run goes great. I'm so excited, and I tell myself I will never underfuel on a thing ever again.
This is, I think a lot of age group triathletes are still kind of, they're 80% worried about performance, but they're 20% worried about their body weight. Mm. I think that's, unfortunately, it makes its way into our psyche because of a million reasons. But you are never, even at a very low intensity exercise, you are never going to keep up with your calorie expenditure by what you eat. You're always going to end up lower than you started. Do not try to diet while you are riding a bike or running. It's not the time to do it. That's when you should be getting in as many carbohydrates as you can to fuel the exercise as well as you can. Do not try. That's not a good game to play, and it's always going to end badly.
Yep. And it's not good for your metabolism either. Paula and I have said this both independently before. The better that we fuel in and out of training, typically your metabolism just ramps up and it's like, awesome. We're throwing as much fuel on the fire as possible.
But I do think that different people need different amounts. And I can definitely survive off of not
survive.
That much.
Yes, but all three of us. How often are you getting 90 grams of carbs per hour workout?
And how often at the end of bike rides you're like, "I'm so hungry. We need to get home. I cannot ride another foot."
Yes, it's every single time. We're never eating as much as we could be eating on the bike because it's a ton of work. It's a lot of stuff that you have to eat. Oh, it's just a 2-hour ride. It's not a big deal. I'll bring like a bar. It's like, where it's like 30 grams of carbohydrates for 2 hours.
I did that today.
Exactly.
The old me would have done absolutely nothing, just water.
Yeah.
So the fact that I had a picky bar and bottles of lemonade, I'm growing up.
It's good. It's really good. It's good for your health. It's good for your performance. It's good for your mood. It's good for your sleep.
Totally. Eat more.
So that's the answer to your question. Very long-winded. Next one here is from Nate, one of many Nates in our life right now.
Do we know this Nate?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Hey guys, longtime listener and supporter here. Question mostly for Eric. As I sit here cleaning out all the old dried tubeless sealant from my tires, I was wondering, how often do you need to remove old sealant from your tubeless setup? Once a year, every couple of years, never. How often should you check the sealant and add more? Thanks for all you do, Nate. Eric, does it make you sick to your stomach to know that I never do this?
No, I would say you're more normal. But for me, when I check sealant in tires and if I find it's pretty dried up, I will go and try to clean out anything that's not wildly challenging to get out.
And is this, do you feel like part of the reason that you don't just like take the valve core out and put in the sealant that way is because you like to look inside and see how much is left and see what the condition of the inside of the tire is?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I like to know. And it's just not that hard for me 90% of the time to reseal it.
I think I just have some PTSD from that, the road wheels, the TT bike tires.
Yeah. I had, but. I mean, sometimes sometimes it is not easy and I get very mad and Paula gets mad at me for being mad about it and being unreasonable. But I do like to know, especially when this is our job. And if the tires don't seal properly in the middle of a workout, that ruins the workout. Or if they, you know, heaven forbid, had a problem in a race, that would ruin the race. So when I usually think to check the tires, just when it feels like it's been a while, and I would say that's probably kicks in for me around like 2 months without having checked. Or if I just notice the tire is losing a lot more air
between workouts,
but between workouts than normal, which just makes me think, okay, the sealant in there is probably dried up or whatever. So then I'll just crack one side of the, you know, one side of the tire, one bead off, look inside, and usually, yeah, it's like pretty dried up or coagulated or whatever. And then I'll just clean out as much as I can, unless I see like a super lumpy section, and then I'll try to scrape that out. Just so.
Isn't it pretty hard to clean out? Like once it kind of.
It's really annoying. Yeah. But I don't know why I feel like trying to get it clean-ish.
Hmm. And do you take the tire completely off the wheel or do you leave one side of the tire?
I like to leave one side on because that just makes it 10 times easier to, you know, get it reseated later.
So maybe check every couple months.
Yeah.
And as annoying as it is, actually take a look inside.
I like to. I know it's not like totally necessary, but I like to. And the thing is, like, I kind of sometimes in mountain bike tires, when you're running inserts, you get the sealant will clump up into like about half the size of a golf ball. And it'll just be a hard rock that's bouncing around in there. And obviously, that's not doing anything. It's just getting in the way. I feel like it could potentially cause problems. And so that just kind of got me into the habit of like opening up the tire and looking at it.
Does it not, does the sealant, because I've never run inserts, does it not like absorb into the insert?
Not really. The way that the rocks form, I think, is there's like little holes sometimes in the inserts or just like moving around the inserts. It creates the same sort of effect as like the sealant moving through a hole in the tire. So it, I don't know, it's a crazy phenomenon, but that's, I think, what got me in the habit of checking more often.
Got it. Okay, next question here is from JF. Hello to all of you. I'm living in Montreal and have been practicing and racing the beautiful sport of triathlon for the last 12 years, mostly Ironman 70.3. My questions are about swim paddles. Are you using different size of paddles during your training? When I train with paddles and pull buoy for a distance of 400 meters, I find it difficult. I'm not a bad swimmer and typically finish the 70.3 swim section within 34 minutes. Is there any muscular exercise to do to make this easier? Thanks for an amazing drone shot. Thanks for amazing drone shots. My 15-year-old son bought his first FPV drone and loves it. Hope to see you in Mont-Tremblant.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Eric and I obviously love FPV drones.
You hear that, DJI?
That's right. So what do you think?
Yeah, Paulo, our coach, will often write big paddles, small paddles, or if you're a special case, learn to swim person, like you came from a running background, sometimes he will custom make paddles or like pick out a certain paddle that's designed to do a certain thing with your stroke, like force you to have a high elbow.
Yeah, he'll actually carbon print paddles.
3D print.
3D print
Paulo
paddles.
Paulo will 3D print paddles?
Yeah. That are certain shapes for different people.
What so, can't he do?
Jeez. Well, I mean, this is very much inside of his area of expertise, having worked with fluid dynamics. Oh, yeah, right. So he's pretty interested in paddle technology and development. But for us, for the most part, I stick with the same size paddle. Paula has, so I have the, what are those things? The finesse that your thumb goes in. I have the 3-dot ones. Paula has the 2-dot. So I think that's large and medium. Occasionally, Paula and I will switch. I will say we just tried out the paddles, the carbon fiber paddles from Arc Swimming. It's a Swedish wetsuit and swim run company. We both really liked those.
Wow.
Because they have like a little bit of flex to them. So you can curve your hand just a little bit and you feel like you have a little bit more
natural feel
of the water. Yeah. We both really like those. That's the first thing I've tried in paddles lately that I thought, oh, that's cool.
I would say that it is good to have different size of paddles though, because occasionally when Eric and I do switch and I'm used to wearing the 2-dot ones, which are like a medium, and then I go to the large, I really notice a difference in like the effort it takes to pull through the water. My stroke rate slows down a lot. I do usually actually go faster too at the same effort.
And maybe it kind of like you get used to a certain paddle size and now a different one is like, oh, right, my elbow's here, my lat's pulling from this thing.
I think it's good to have a few different ones for that reason. Like you get so used to the feel of the ones you always use. So changing it smaller or bigger is a good thing. And generally, bigger paddles are more of a strength workout. So if this person, I would say they're really struggling to even get through a 400 pull, maybe try one size down of paddles and like get some strength with that size and then size back up to your other ones.
Yep.
And see.
I like that.
How much easier it feels once you have a little bit of strength from like
this, this is perfect timing for me because I just visited Zoot headquarters in Southern California, and Sean at Zoot very generously gave me a new set of their paddles, and they're like a third of the size of the paddles I normally use.
Oh, they have paddles.
They're, in my opinion, the coolest paddles I've ever seen. And the pool buoy is also the coolest pool buoy I've ever seen.
Oh, so they have Hawaii floral patterns on them?
I think it's like, it looks like Plasti Dip, black and white.
Oh, really?
That's what it looks like.
Cool. I have a kickboard from them, yeah.
He said they're still kind of like optimizing the kickboard, but I'm excited to use them.
A kickboard is a kickboard, right?
That's kind of how I feel. Well, I don't know. I feel like...
I don't know. If you're going 101 yeah. for a 100 yeah, yard geez. Kick...
What kind of kickboard is this?
Maybe you need an optimized kickboard.
Yeah.
Get that last second. Get sub Keith's 1 minute.
Opinion. We need Keith's opinion on those on the Zoot kickboard. I don't think it's on there. I think this is like not made yet.
Oh, shit.
I think I got prototype product, I think.
Oh, there's no...
I hope I'm not... Won't get in trouble by saying this, but it was in the shop there and he just said I could have it.
That's free advertising.
Leaking Zoot swim equipment.
Sorry, Sean.
Things you never thought you would do.
I know, right? I know. Okay. Next question here is from Steven. Paula, congratulations and best of luck on the PTO's new T100 tour. Question, were any Canadian locations considered by the PTO and might we see Canadian locations in future years like we have previously in Edmonton?
Yeah.
Steven.
I just know a little bit about this because my mom was the competition manager for the PTO race in Edmonton for 2 years and or maybe just 1 year. Was it only in Edmonton 1 year?
She did the bike
year?
Race and the
it was only triathlon. In Edmonton once.
Yeah. And she ran all the WTSs.
Anyway, and I'm on the athlete board. So I think the mission of the PTO here with the T100 World Triathlon Series is to showcase really spectacular cities on camera. So somewhere like Ibiza, where you see it from a helicopter and you see us racing around it, and you want to go there. It's like these desirable... It's kind of the same as F1, racing around Monaco. If they were racing around the middle of nowhere, Idaho, it wouldn't have the same effect. So I think that they're being really selective with that. That said, Edmonton was not in the position to host the race because Horlock Park, where the venue, where it was hosted last time, was closed for a few years. But I think they want, like, I hate saying this because I'm from Edmonton, but they want somewhere like Vancouver or Montreal or somewhere that's globally known.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's very possible that there'll be a Canadian location. I unfortunately don't think it will be Edmonton, but I think it will be one of the kind of more globally known cities that have these, like, the wow factor.
Yeah.
And that'll get people from all around tuning in to watch a race in this place they've always wanted to visit, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's cool. All I can say.
Well, that's a great answer. Okay, next question here is from Amanda. This may be more for Paula, but I'm not sure bathroom stops are even an issue for pros. As a female in a one-piece tri suit, going pee during a tri or any time, to be honest, in the suit is such a pain. It's hard pulling that thing back when all sweaty and salty. Curious if there is a tri suit designed with women in mind that has some sort of easy pull open access, and I've just never seen it. Or if you guys designed that in your next release. Wow. That's asking a lot. I would be first up to buy. Love the pod. I always get excited for new episodes. Amanda.
I think this is really the point of two-piece kits. I personally never have to go to the bathroom when I'm racing. And I'd say if I had to pee, I might just go in my kit, which is gross. But
I miss what everyone does. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've never, fortunately, I've never had to pull over to like a porta potty and pull my kit down and do the whole thing. But it is possible. I do think the easiest solution here is to get the two-piece kits. And a lot of them fit really nicely. They have a drawstring on the waist. They have a comfortable top. Marinda Carfrail was raced in a two-piece. So she obviously found it very comfortable. It's just a little bit more out of style now, I guess, now that everyone's coming out with one-pieces. But I don't know of a one that's easier to get on and off than others.
I have had to stop in races, and it would have been awesome to have a two-piece. But yeah, I think companies typically dump their highest-end technology into the one-pieces currently because that's what most pros want to wear. It's probably aerodynamically 1% faster. But Yeah, I mean, if all things considered, speed was the same, yeah, why not do a two-piece?
I think maybe, Amanda, I don't know if you need to hear this from us, but people pee during their races in their suits all the time. And I forget who it was. I don't want to put her on blast, but a friend of ours said she aims for once during a 70.3 and twice during a full.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. That is a great indication that you are hydrated enough.
Yeah. So that's it does sound gross, and I actually physically have never been able to do it, but I did try. That's just what pros do all the time. You just pee. If you have to do something other than pee, probably not the best to do it and try to find a porta potty and then just rip that thing around your ankles as fast as possible. But it's okay to pee in your race suit during a race.
Yeah, and having been on the receiving end of a bikes coming back to a bike shop from Tri-Bike Transport, a lot of non-pros pee on their bikes too.
It's not just the tippy top, Amanda. Oh yeah, that is
just
gross.
Make sure you wash your kit after.
And your bike.
All your things.
And your shoes.
Maybe a lot of people don't think to. Do you put your kit in the washing machine? I don't. I hand wash them.
You hand wash them?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're so delicate.
Oh no, I definitely put it in the washing machine. Cold, but like cold water, but
cold and hang dry.
No way.
Especially with the Castelli ones that are like super thin and have the ribbing on the sleeves.
Wow.
I just get really nervous.
Why risk it? What if it got snagged or like anything? I mean,
my bibs cost just as much as my race kits, and I put those in the wash. You know, so do my some of my jerseys are like $180-190, and I put those in the wash, and they hold up fine.
Yeah, well, if our
race custom kit, Castelli kits get
we can't
damaged,
go buy another one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Wow. Okay, and last question here. Hi, all. After last week's kick challenge announcement, I realized my pool doesn't have kickboards. I just swim and don't have much space to store extra gear, so I was curious if there's any swimming gear essentials for someone with a swim background that's a worthwhile investment. Pool buoys make sense, but what about kickboards, paddles, snorkels, and fins?
Most pools should have a kickboard.
I agree, but Derek's pool does not.
Okay, well, that I would say is try to find a pool buoy that will double as a kickboard. It's like the flatter ones.
You can use a pool buoy as a kickboard. Like, we're not going for other than for the hashtag TTL kick challenge, we're not trying to kick for time.
You sort of can, but there's an ergonomical like ease to using one that's a little flatter.
If you're going to do a significant amount of kick, yeah.
Yeah. I don't bring fins to this pool. What I bring is a pool buoy, 3 or 4 pairs of paddles because my coach is a paddle weirdo, and a band.
Okay, so the band, yeah, I tried the band for the first time with you guys and it blew my mind, but that's all you'd get. No snorkel.
I don't have a snorkel, but oh my gosh, I was obsessed with my snorkel. There were a lot of years, like, I don't know what age, but I was so much faster with a snorkel, and I would like get panicky swimming without a snorkel because I was so much worse.
To breathe a lot.
Well, and also my form was so much better. Like, I slipped a lot when I was breathing. I think I've fixed that since then, but with the snorkel, my stroke was like way better. So I would go way faster and it became an addiction. I had to cut myself off.
Oh my God. I just have this urge to buy a snorkel now. I had one for a while, but it was way early in my swim. And now I want to try
this. I kind of want to get one now that I'm not addicted to it and see if it can just like be a tool versus a crutch.
Eric, do you have any desires? Just not excite you at all?
I really struggled to get into the snorkel thing and just never did. Like, Paulo never really went through much of a snorkel phase.
Yeah, unless
it was like a specific thing for a specific learn to swim person who was struggling with, you know. And the couple of times that I've tried snorkels, I just felt like I was suffocating. I couldn't quite figure out the blow the air out for the flip turn.
I had that down to a science.
And I just was like, nah, I'm out.
We're going to try snorkels again. I'm calling it right now. It's one of those things that we decide on the pod. I want to try it. I had one that doesn't work anymore because I lost like the piece that doesn't let water into
the valve.
Yeah, the valve. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let's all buy snorkels. It's going to be called the TTL Snorkel Challenge.
What's the challenge?
You're going to do 100 with and without, 100 without and see what you're faster
at. That is a great game. That's
we have to go maximum effort with a snorkel.
Yeah,
this is my
worst
nightmare.
That's what I always used to do.
Actually, Eric had a funny idea of me and Keith swimming next to each other, but Keith doing kick as hard as he can, and me doing free as hard as I can.
You'd still nearly get lapped.
Yeah, he's that much faster. Yeah, it's brutal.
It wouldn't even be entertaining because it wouldn't be close.
I think it'd be entertaining to see, like, this guy looks like he's barely working and kicking. The other guy looks like he's flailing for his life and still somehow slower.
Yeah, it's like that comedian skit of, like, can we have a random guy, like, thrown into the 100-meter dash
to see what it's like?
A scope of reference to how impressive this is.
Exactly.
Yeah, the problem with creating the snorkel challenge is, like, we're just laughing about it like it's funny, but so many people do our challenges.
We really need to be careful.
Well,
you guys didn't even do the kick challenge.
Careful and committed.
Yeah. I did remember exactly why we did not do the kick challenge is because they set up our pool.
That's why. You're right.
The day that we were going to do it, we showed up and they had to arrange the pool for a swim meet and the 25-yard end was shut down and the end that we could swim in was 30
Oh, which is
yards.
A made up.
30 meters.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So if I'm staying the night here, which it appears I am, maybe tomorrow at the pool, I'll film you guys doing the kick challenge.
Yeah. Sea level.
Paul says we'll see. She does not. You're not interested.
I'm more interested in the snorkel challenge.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Okay. Well, that's all we got. Next week, maybe we'll be in person again.
We definitely will, Nick. You live here now.
Me and Flynn.
We live here now. Cool. Well, Nick, thank you for driving down. Thank you to everyone who listened. Thank you to everyone who submitted a time or a video for the kick challenge. That was really fun.
Yeah, we really loved it.
Even though me, Eric, and I have not done it yet, we did participate in approximately 700 text messages with Nick about the kick challenge. Yeah. So it really did take over our week.
Yeah.
In a funny way.
Yeah.
Cool. That's all.
That's it.
Later, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.